So what we're going to get through now is we're going to go through some of the APIs and functionality that drives the whole automation process at the back end. So we're going to run through the Windows Azure Pack and Service Management APIs and how the Service Provider Foundation works. So when you look at some of the previous versions of portals or control panels that Microsoft shipped, whether it's the self-service portal from VMM or whether it's the Windows Azure Services for Windows Server, which is some people refer to as the Windows Azure Portal version 1, okay, it's had some limitations around flexibility and functionality. There was also constrained end-user access to be able to manage their resources, as well as complex implementations and consistent deployment processes and consistent end-user experiences. And there was also some blockers that prevented customers from going onto the cloud. So in R2, with the new management APIs, we've seen improved management, which gives us much more consistent management APIs. It gives us a much more consistent experience. And the customers are really seeing a very similar process to what they would if they went to the Windows Azure cloud. But they also get to see their service providers extend the solution and enhance and come up with ways to differentiate their product offering. And the way we can deliver that is using the APIs to talk to Orchestrator, to talk to the new service management automation system, as well as PowerShell scripts. There's also more business opportunities with the new product set. So using the new management APIs, we're also able to offer new product offerings that weren't able to offer before. We're also able to reduce the deployment complexities, okay? So also the deployment of the Microsoft stack, but also the deployment of and integration with third-party technologies. So new management APIs means that out of the box, we have a lot more functionality than we did before. If you have a look at the Windows Azure Pack, we now have service templates. We now have more functionality when we're trying to provision and manage our VMs. We can also extend it to third-party or custom elements as well. So there's people that have produced third-party billing engines that tie in using the same management APIs. So we're able to easily extend based on using these APIs to enhance the solution that Microsoft ships out of the box. We're also making it cost-effective. Developers don't have to go and write things from scratch. They don't have to write their own APIs to talk to all the different system center components. So as a developer, I wouldn't have to write to Ops Manager. I don't have to write to Orchestrator. I don't have to write to DPM or these other products individually. I can go through the management APIs, and the management APIs will then go and talk to whatever product it needs to. So when we look at the CloudOS platform for hosting, we really are talking about the service management API, which is right here, smack bang in the middle, where we have our control panels, whether it's Microsoft or third party, sitting on top of. And then we also have our service provider foundation APIs down here in the service system center service section. So the Azure Pack, it's made up of web hosting, virtual machine hosting, database hosting, but it isn't just about what we can do today, it's also about the open and interoperable solution that it provides. You can tie in. We're seeing control panels either tie in at the management APIs, or some of the other control panel vendors are actually tying directly into the Windows Azure Pack. So in your data center, what we're delivering with the platform and the APIs is an experience that's going to be the same no matter whether it's a private, public, on-prem, or in the cloud service from Windows Azure. It's going to be the same experience, similar interfaces, so the customer has a same expected delivery across all the platforms. So the Windows Azure Pack gives that self-service user experience to the end customer. It gives you as an administrator or a service provider management portal capabilities and be able to manage and restrict what your customers see. So we can do the scalable web hosting. We can do the infrastructure as a service, database as a service, service bus, so brokered messaging communication. We can also deliver other servers on top of other services on top of that. We just need to extend what the UI looks like. So Windows Server and Windows Azure together for benefits for you as a service provider. The Windows Azure Pack delivers a out-of-the-box solution that you could go to market with today. Okay, it may not do all the functions and features that you want, but you could go to market with it today if you wanted to. It gives you usage billing, a lot of automation as you've seen during your labs and the demonstrations. It's optimized for hardware monetization, so you can either do billing per hour, billing per day, billing per month, whichever model suits your environment. There's also opportunities in the system to upsell customers, so you can make them change their, so you can let them change their hardware and upsell to faster machines. So what is the service management API itself? Well, it's a superset of APIs that builds and provides access to an extensible framework for hosters to be able to talk to the virtual machine manager, the service provider foundation APIs, and web hosting and web farm management, okay, as well as your database management. The administration capabilities are there to be designed for you as a service provider to take and use with multi-tenancy in mind. It's an extensible and standard set of APIs that enable you to manage and automate processes for the Microsoft product stack. The Microsoft ISV partners are starting to deploy and show and offer customizations for the Azure Pack. So infrastructure as a service, deployments with Windows Azure Pack, the tenant would log in to the service management portal or a custom control panel. So you'd have Windows Azure Pack or a custom control panel from a third-party vendor or one you've developed yourself. Tenant 2 could be coming directly into the service management APIs. So they could have app controller on-premise and they point that to your SPF servers or service management APIs and come in via that method. The service provider foundation sits under those management APIs and then go and talk to and aggregate all of the different calls and will go and talk to virtual machine manager, the web servers, or the database servers, whatever it is that's required to speak. And it uses the fabric stamps and the tenant subscription IDs and everything else to link all those services together. So the Windows Azure Pack self-service infrastructure as a service enables us to deliver standalone virtual machines, scalable virtual machine roles, as well as attached or virtual networks, okay? So that you can make sure that they can either create their own VM networks or they can just attach existing networks that you've created for them. There's upgrade their capability of infrastructure as a service. So when they log into the infrastructure as a service component, which is their VMs, they can see the resources they have available, they can see the resources they've consumed, but they can also see the performance of their servers. Okay? There is also an inbox gallery for Windows and Linux images. So you can actually download a gallery from the Microsoft cloud, and that gallery contains web servers, databases, servers, SharePoint 2013, et cetera, templates to deploy those applications. So if you wanted to have a set of templates that you could offer your customers, you can actually go and download those from a Microsoft gallery. Okay, and it'll automatically deploy a SharePoint server or a web server, etc. The service management automation, okay, is where we have a set of PowerShell runbooks that can go and trigger events or tasks to execute. So you can have the system automatically go and create a new server, or you could have a task that's in there that goes and kicks off another process. So for example, maybe I've got a template that I go and deploy. It's a pretty standard Windows OS template. I could have a runbook that sits there waiting that once that VM's rebooted, after it's been created, after that first reboot, I execute a PowerShell runbook that maybe goes and installs IIS on that server. Or it could go and install SQL on that server. Whatever you can do in PowerShell, we can put into a runbook in the service management automation and have a trigger event kick that process off. So the web hosting and service management APIs I'm going to cover a little bit later in the next session, okay? So we'll skip that for now. We'll come back to that. So why the Windows Azure pack? Well, we're giving you an already built platform that customers are already used to using, okay? A lot of customers are already using the Windows Microsoft Azure Cloud, okay? So it would give them the same experience that they would see there. Except you as a service provider can extend that and differentiate and offer some product offerings that the Windows Azure Cloud and competitive third-party clouds can't offer yet. We're able to do the isolated virtual networks. We're able to extend and integrate with third-party products. We're delivering the Azure Cloud code that they use in the Azure Cloud to you to use in your own data center, so you can offer your own Azure-type services. It's out of the box. There is no cost for Windows Azure Pack. It is free. You download it, install it, and you can start running it. It's there to help you automate your systems from day one. Okay? There's no messy processes you have to go through to be able to just start, create VMs, stop VMs. You can make that happen for customers from day one. From a web perspective, we can also deploy web applications, PHP, .NET, Java web apps, whatever it is, we can deploy it through the platform installer and the Windows Azure pack. We have our service provider foundation APIs, which are designed to help enable multi-tenancy in a much faster process. So it's there to help you as a service provider, whether you want to build a third-party control panel yourself, or whether you want to go and take an Extend ASP or a Parallels or a Citrix control panel. We're fast-tracking their capability of deploying and adding these services to their control panels as well. So we're also able to extend the SPF capabilities by using runbooks, whether it's a PowerShell runbook in the SMA engine or whether it's an Orchestrator runbook. So the service provider foundation architecture is you have your customer who will log into a control panel, whether it's WAP, whether it's your custom control panel or a third-party control panel. That will then go and talk to the management APIs, which then go and talk to the service provider foundation APIs using OData and REST calls. And that will then go and talk to VMM, Orchestrator, Ops Manager, or any other System Center tool that we have. The hosting feature investments in SPF mean that we can make sure customers will always have a self-service capability. Claims-based authentication can be used. For those that are looking at deploying Windows Azure Pack R2, if you compare, the model for security has changed already since we did the first version, okay? That security model is now, there is no AD dependency, okay? You don't have to use AD authentication. You can use a SQL database table and authenticate against that if you want. We can do the multiple claims-based type authentication. You could point it to another directory services. You could point it to the Windows Azure AD services for authentication. Or you could integrate with other customers' domains and other things as well. The SPF APIs are purely designed for VM management, the service management, usage metering with Ops Manager, self-service networks, and we have that extensible REST API set for System Center for you to expand on other services. So you can very easily, if you wanted to use DPM, you could start offering a DPM backup solution and service as part of your offering as well. Or if you wanted to integrate with Service Manager to do ITIL type service management requests or help desk requests, we're also able to integrate into that solution as well. We have simplified management with a stamp management, so every tenant will have a stamp, and that stamp identifies what that tenant can see so that we make sure that tenants can only see their own servers. With a multi-tenancy aggregation, what we're looking at is we can have tenant A, tenant B, and we can have three different cloud data center builds with clouds in those data centers. So down the bottom, I have my VMM Server 1, which has a gold and silver one cloud. I have the green box in the middle, which has my VMM Server 2, which has a bronze and silver cloud, which is Silver 2. And then on the far right, I have a nice dark green box, which is my third data center, which has Silver 3 and Europe 3 in it. Up the top, I have tenant A, who has a tenant admin user role with a couple of tenants, one in production, one dev user, and a test user. Tenant B has a tenant admin user role, and then they also have some dev users and test users and production users. So tenant A, we got a couple of users. One tenant A production user puts a couple of VMs in the gold cloud in that first data center. Tenant A dev user puts a VM in the bronze cloud. And tenant A's test user goes and creates a VM in the Silver 1 cloud, the Silver 2 cloud, and the Silver 3 cloud. Tenant B has a couple of users. They decide to start building some VMs. So the tenant B dev user builds a VM in Silver 3. The test user from tenant B also deploys in Silver 3. And tenant B's production user role decides to deploy in Europe 3. The tenant B users and the tenant A users are all in the same cloud, but they cannot see each other because of the way the stamp system works. So the Service Provider Foundation workflow, we have a client application which the user authenticates against. We have our SPF APIs, which then go and authenticate the user. We have our resource model, which dictates what resources are available. We have our action mapping and task execution. That task execution defines the runbooks that we're going to execute at the back end, or makes sure that when we want to upgrade in future releases, we have an upgrade path that's safe. Okay, work that we do today isn't going to just be written off when we do an upgrade to the SPF or any of the APIs. We can create new resources, provider actions to map to new PowerShell or runbooks. We can also create new tasks using execution logic. So I'm going to get Craig to come up and do an SPF and service management automation demo for you. And we'll switch back over shortly. So Craig, can you come up? Does anyone have any questions while we're waiting for Craig to switch up? Yep. So you could, if you wanted to, add Hyper-V replica or light migration tasks into the portal. Because all you would be doing is executing a PowerShell script that goes and tells it to light migrate the VM from this data center to that data center and whichever hosts or clusters you're going to. So you can extend it to do that. So the question is, are they using the same SPF foundation and where does SPF live? So SPF is a server role that we would deploy. So the SPF is pretty much sitting on your, if you have a look in your labs, there is an SPF server which has all of the service management automation services installed on it, as well as all the SPF framework on it as well. So you actually have to deploy the SPF framework on a server. Okay? So it's an actual deployment of an application onto a server, and that's where your SPF sits. You can have multiple servers, so you can make it highly scalable, okay? But it sits on one or multiple servers, and it's up to you how you want to deploy that. We've had customers that do HA deployments where we have load balances in front of those servers, and all the SPF calls come into the load balancer and then get distributed across multiple servers running the SPF framework, because they use a shared database and everything else. So you can make it truly highly available. You would do multiple servers doing multiple roles, and you would put load balancers and everything else in front like you would any other service. Any other questions? No? Okay.
Okay, can everybody hear me okay? Okay, so the SPF framework is accessed mostly via the OData feeds. Okay, so it's a web service you call to make your functions against it. There is a set of PowerShell commandlets that are available to configure and check the settings of it. So what I'll do first of all is I'll show you the web, the actual entry point of the web service. So here's my... Ooh, got the password right. Okay. So very, very pretty to look at. Now, if you open up a web service through IE, IE understands this as an ADAM feed and will try to render it as a web feed. So before you can access any of this, I'll just quickly show you what it is. So go into Tools, Internet Options, onto Content, and there's this web feed sites here. So by default on all IEs, this is enabled. Okay, so we get rid of all of this stuff, and it allows us to go through and view all of these feeds correctly. So these are basically the functions you've got available through WCF and OData capabilities, okay? So each one of these will go into, through the SPF server, into VMM and start pulling information out of it. So the first step in configuring the SPF is once you've got it actually installed, mapped to its database, is you test the websites to make sure they actually are accessible and it is functional. Okay, the connection from SPF to VMM is utilizing the Internet Explorer, sorry, the IIS application pool user identity. That's where the user identity is configured, the one that actually does most of the communication. So if that identity doesn't have the correct permissions in SPF and in VMM, then it will not function. Okay, so what I'll do here is I've got a couple of URLs just quickly linked up here for us to have a quick look through. I'll go through and explain what these ones are. Okay, so the first one's VM templates. So when we built our templates in VMM, they then get exposed through the SPF Foundation framework. So what we can do is we can actually see in here, we actually have all the items about what version of template we have, different values about these templates, who the owner was. Yep. Is that better? Everybody can see? Yeah, excellent. Okay. So you've got the normal OData type of information here, basically saying where it's coming in through the service. Okay, our templates, it gives us our GUID ID of which ones are there. So that's our first template. We could then, through code, go back in and start retrieving more information about each of these templates. Okay, the other one that's come through that's worked is the clouds, should be. Yep, so these are the clouds. Okay. So I'm just seeing whether I can recognize the name again or where it is. So So you can see all the values that we actually have down in here about each of the cloud, where we'll actually see logical networks, the compatibility profiles. All the information you get exposed through here is what you actually get exposed through the VMM GUI as well. Okay. Now the next part of the SPF is actually the PowerShell section. So it does have its own little PowerShell prompt. So what I'll do is I'll run this. Actually, I'll need to do this over on the SPF server, I believe. So jump over to SPF. Okay, so all I've done is import the module. Now what I'll do is I'll get the server. So you see here we've got our SPF server. Now what it's showing is it's showing the connections we have available. Now the IaaS automation is the SMA engine that's part of the WAP portal. VMM01 is obviously the VMM server. And the other one is the Operations Manager Data Warehouse. That's actually the usage. Okay, so when you deploy all of the foundation framework and all the pieces together, you'll actually have an SMA engine, an SPF engine, and an SMA, well, an SPF usage engine, which all sit together. Okay, just quickly go through some of the settings. So this basically command that just returns our initial connection settings to each one. So we see here we've just got our standard URL for SPF, which is the one that you'll use to connect to the web services. Okay, the other ones are SQL data sources for the usage in the data warehouse. Okay, the stamp for the environment we've got set up at the moment. Okay, we only have one environment hooked up through here, so we've only got one stamp of resourcing that's available for us. Okay, and tenants. Okay, we only have our one tenant available at the moment. Well, actually, two tenants in there. So these were the tenants that were created through the WAP portal. So if I flick over to the WAP portal, and go to my user accounts, they're the two users that are there. So here in the GUI, we see them as an email address. SPF sees them as this nice, wonderful GUI right here, which is an email address, underscore, and a big GUI. And when we flick across to VMM, go into centers in here, we see them coming through as the same GUI. Now you notice that the Craig at Skybell, Craig at SayIT has two entries in here. That's because there's two subscriptions applied to it. Each subscription actually tags on and creates a new entry point. Okay, so the rest of these won't function here. They won't return any values. These other tenant roles are part of the VMM structure. So when you create a self-service user in VMM itself, there's another set of user roles that actually come into play. Okay, that's the SPF stuff. Now flick over to the server management side. So the server management is done inside the WAP portal. So we have our automation here. Okay, so this is basically, it uses the orchestrator engine, but they've rebuilt the orchestrator style engine into SMA, which now runs as a dedicated web service type infrastructure, almost like a sandbox runbook engine. Now, the WAP portal actually hooks into that. So once you've registered, you'll register your SMA engine, which we've already done here. That then sends all of those commands into that one. So when the runbook's fired, they're scheduled and dropped into that in process. Okay. Our assets, I'll sort of go backwards for this. Our assets is all of the objects that we want to use inside our runbook. So rather than storing things like a credentials inside a runbook where people won't be able to see it, we store the credentials as an asset and then use that asset in our runbook. Okay. So the type of ones we've got available to use is here. So we've got a connection. Okay, multiple different connection types we want to use. So we just pick which one we want to actually use. So what's a good one we can use into here? Can't see it at the moment. Yeah. Okay. So what I'll do is I'll pick the management SQL server. Pick that guy. Just give it a quick name for now. Oh, that's a bit sensitive. Okay, and then we'll basically enter our password, computer name, user ID of which one we'll be connecting into it with. So that'll basically build a connection string into that service. Okay, credentials are your standard type of credentials you have available, which is a PowerShell credential or a certificate credential. Okay. Variables that you want to set up in the environment. And the last one. The last one's basically schedules. I'll kind of show you the schedules in a minute. Okay, so once you've got your assets set up, the next step is to go in and start configuring runbooks. So I'll show you this runbook first. So once you've clicked in a runbook, you'll come across to this screen here, which will tell you whether it's been published, how many sessions of it are actually running, how many queued, how many are scheduled, that type of structure. Tell you who authored it, the publishing status of it, and the last couple of jobs that have been run. So what I'll do is I'll click across. So the jobs tab will just show you the last lot of running jobs and the current status of where they are. You've got a little menu there where you can pick which date range you want to go through. I'll go into the author section. So in the author section is where you actually get to see what's actually happening inside the runbook. This is all PowerShell workflow. So by default, when you create a runbook, it'll be in a draft mode. You'll have to then go in and say to publish that runbook. So here I've got one which is just going to get a orchestrate a runbook for me. Now, if I wanted to edit that server, that runbook, I click draft, edit runbook, and it now changes to basically what you see is what you get type editor. We can go in and modify anything we want to do in there. Now, you'll notice in here, I have PS cred name. Okay, that's the credentials I'm going to use for my web service call into Orchestrator. But rather than have them sitting here where everybody can see them just by viewing these logs, I've actually got them stored as an asset. So what I'll do is I'll discard the draft on that one, which will revert it back to being a published one. I'll flick back and show you those credentials in the asset. So there's the credentials that I've got set up in the asset. Okay. So basically just a standard form for your credentials. So let's go back to the runbooks. Go back into this one. Next tab is the schedule tab. So in here is where I could actually create a schedule of when I want to run this runbook, because there's two ways to fire the runbooks by default. One is via a schedule and one is off a tagged event in the VMM console. Okay. So the scheduling process, I'll just skip past the welcome screen on that one. The scheduling process is pretty much the default scheduling you're going to get from anywhere. Okay. The only thing to remember is the time is not relative to daylight savings. Okay. It doesn't adjust for daylight savings when you set the time. Okay. Won't worry about a schedule because we're not going to run it by a schedule right now. Okay, configuration. So this is where you can actually name the description of it. Once you've given it a name, you can't really change it. So be careful about that. Give it the name first off. Your logging records are all set up in here, and your tags. Your tags are where you're going to actually group the runbooks together so you know what they are. If you want one to link to a VM process, it's got to have a tag of SPF associated with it. If it doesn't have that, it won't show up later on. This runbook, I'm not going to run from that area, but another thing you can do is if you're only building runbooks for yourself and you're only going to be using it for yourself, put a tag on it, because I'll show you in a minute, you can then change the order of the list to see those tags in that grouping. Okay, so we'll flick across back to the main dashboard of the runbook, so we'll just hit back. Okay, when I click on runbooks, over here, this is what I mean by the tags. So I can sort by that column. Now, currently at the moment, this is only a dev system. We've only got a few play runbooks in here, and we're up to 32 already. By default, there's 27, so it's already onto two pages. So by the time you put 30 or 40 runbooks in here, you're going to be trying to sort through 100-odd runbooks trying to find out what you need. Okay. So the way they all link together, I'll show you this before we kick one off. It's over into VMM. We now have the word automation sitting at the top, just up there. So we'll go into the automation side. We've already had a couple already linked together. So basically what you do is you link it to an action inside the engine and tell it what runbook you want and say whether it's enabled or disabled. So I'll show you what one looks like. Not coming up, yeah. There we go. Okay. So basically there's a set of parent events and each one of those has a child event on it. So if I picked SPF VM, then there'll be a create, delete, and update child event on each one of those. So let me just flick down to that. Why are you not letting me out? There we go. So there's the action events we fire against. Okay, once we've picked one of those, I'll just pick anyone for now. Then we get to select our runbook that we want to run against it. Okay, we hit okay, submits it into the system. Okay, if all's gone well, next time you perform that action, it should fire that runbook off for you. Okay, what I'll do here now is we'll go across and we'll fire one in. So let me go back to runbooks. Okay. I'll just bring up the runbook as it is. So this is a runbook we're going to quickly run off. So what we're going to do is going to connect to Orchestrator. We're going to use our creds that we've stored in there. We're going to run a runbook called log event. It's a complex runbook. All it's going to do is create an event in the event log on the Orchestrator server. Okay, we've got a couple of parameters that we're passing through there. We'll update those parameters as we go through. You can get the runbook to present and ask for parameters if you need to. Okay, and then we'll call a couple of PowerShell commands to do it. Okay, so hit start on that one. Okay. Okay, so you'll get your usual Azure prompt there. I'll click view job. It'll go off and do a status. So the first status is scheduling, then it's queuing, then it's starting, then it's ended or error. Okay, input parameters there, we didn't accept any. Output parameters, we don't have any yet till it's actually run. So, okay, just finished. Okay, so here's our output parameters. It's gone over, it's made the web service call, it's done its work over there, and it's brought back some information about what's happening with it, okay? Now what we'll do is we'll flick over to the Orchestrator server, go into our event logs, application log. OK, Okay, the time on this clock is 4:54, so we'll open that up. Okay, there we are. This event log has come in. So what's happened there is I'll bring up the runbook designer for you and show you it in there. So I have my runbook here. I have my runbooks folder, and I have my event here. Okay, so it's received the information. It's then created the event in the event log. So that runbook has been run on the WAP server, sent across to the management server, the SMA server. It's then scheduled it and then run it on the orchestrator server via web services, which has then logged an event to itself. Okay, so you can see here we've called into orchestrator. Once we're in orchestrator, we can do anything we want in orchestrator. We can pass through those variables and get orchestrator to do the heavy lifting for us. Okay, is there any questions? Nope. No questions? Okay, all done.